the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Vick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Vick.
We're back. Hour three. On this Tuesday, that can mean one thing if you were watching Fox yesterday. Andy explained to Greg that he's on weekly at Tuesdays at 11 for years. That was great.
You'll be getting an invoice from Naira. I forgot to mention that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, those a racing publication which shall remain nameless that used to run tons of ads, and they would just bill the farms and different people and just hope somebody paid them.
Well, all right.
So that's what we're doing. I'm going to start just doing stuff like that. And we're just going to send bills out. And listen, you know.
I have a follow-up to that you're going to love.
Taking off my tab?
This is, well, because there's one person who would, if he was sitting in today, John Parada would tell you he got one of those invoices once about a month after the stallion that was advertised had already passed away. And so he sent back a note that said, I appreciate the thought, but he's dead. And
as is the person who sent him the book. But it's not being confused with anybody living at this point. That's great. I think our friend Andy Beyer would find this even more amusing.
Oh, my.
Tell Andy that story, actually.
I will. Yeah. Tell him that. I didn't realize he had a... Did he have a relationship in that publication of some ilk?
No. Anyway.
That's so great.
How was your holiday weekend?
Listen, my holiday weekend, they're all the baby. We went to
horsey babies or baby babies.
Well, actually, we did go see the horsey baby on Thursday.
I know, you confused me with that.
Well, we went to see the combatant baby, who is a nice baby, and they're all nice babies. But then we went to see the real baby.
What are you going to say? It's like an ugly baby. It's like Seinfeld with the ugly baby.
The ugly baby. Then we went to see the real baby, baby number three. I'm now a grandfather, as you say, by proxy, I guess.
Okay. I mean, to sort of take some credit for that, I think it's a mistake.
Well.
You had absolutely nothing to do with those kids at all.
I'm grandparent adjacent.
Grandfathered in?
Yes, literally. Well, they call me Pop. And
Eve.
Yeah.
We got to move on.
Anyway, so then of course came back and we did the show yesterday for Memorial Day, and we were looking forward to what actually was a little bit of a, I won't call it agonizing beat, but I was very pleased with the effort yesterday from Scherzando, and we'll
yeah, he's a check getter, but he's not a, just doesn't, he has an aversion to winning.
Well,
he got an aversion to winning. He has trouble passing horses late in races, period.
Well, it was going to
say, well, but it's sort of a proven fact.
Yeah.
That race was handed to him on a platter. The winner didn't have a good trip. He was in traffic. The second horse was weaving around through the stretch. Anyway, I wish he was second, as you know. Or won. It'd been fine if he won, but he didn't.
Well,
there are worse beats than that.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Of the first three finishers, he probably had the least excuse of anybody by far.
Well, you did warn everybody. What did you like about the runner up at 30-1?
I liked him. I just was pointing out that it was a fold of one horse that ran the turf.
Right.
That horse was a big move up on turf, me and Sapp. I mean, it's, you know, those are the kind of horses, you know, if you really like the winner, for instance, who, you know, I picked second, I think was a favorite, so it's not like,
yeah.
I mean, I think if you really like the winner, that was a very hittable. I didn't like the fourth horse. Sarah liked the fourth horse, but I didn't see any pedigree for that horse. I would never have used that horse, but she did. But at least as far as tries, it was very hittable if you really like the winner. For me, actually, probably the good opinion I had in the race was I didn't like the 11 and 12. I think there's a very big difference between 6-furlong maiden turf races and 7-furlong maiden races. And in the sense that, or even non-maidens, but particularly the maidens at this level, in that I think horses that are okay at 6 in some of those races don't translate to 7 as much as horses that might cut back a little bit. And I think it's a lot trickier. And I thought both the 11 and 12 had been in races of Aqueduct that were eminently winnable, particularly the 11, I think, was the Pletcher horse. And this horse has already failed now 4 times at short prices for Todd Pletcher. When horses fail at short prices for guys like Todd or Chad Brown or Brad Cox or any of those trainers that win, especially when they have, you know, firsters that are short prices in their first couple races, Every loss is a massive black mark. You know, it just sort of gets bigger and bigger because they're not winning when they're supposed to win. And I think the outside horse, it sort of had a fair chance to win and just didn't get it done. So I think they were this clear, you know, clear second, third choices, very similar price as the winner. So I think for me, the best opinion I had was getting rid of them, honing in on, you know, I'm not trying to red board, but you hone in on the 3, who I picked second behind the idea I had that didn't run a step, the Clermont first on turf. You could have hit that at least a try. The super I couldn't have, but if you want to get creative, I guess it was a war dancer. There was no pedigree to the dam side, but you know, Scherzando's a horse that can run, and he had no chance in his last turf start and ran a race that could have won this his last time on the turf before that. And, I mean, there are things to like about him. And the second horse, you know, was a pedigree move-up play, no question about it.
Yeah, nicely done.
There were a few in that, and he was, well, I mean, I didn't do anything. I didn't pick the horse. I didn't do anything particularly clever in that race by any stretch.
Well, but I don't get a chance.
I'm just talking more about a theoretical way.
I understand.
It may have worked in this race. Not always going to work, but the maiden turf race, especially at this level, you can find sort of goofy long shots sometimes that'll run to their pedigrees a little bit. I mean, one of the few things you can do to find oddball big-priced horses is to find horses that have a pedigree to move up significantly in the turf. Not necessarily looking for horses that, you know, the dam produced two stake winners. Those horses are usually going to be pretty readily apparent.
Right.
I mean the horses that, you know, were running 23 buyers on the turf and went to the turf and maybe didn't even win, but maybe ran second or third and moved up their buyers to 70s, you know, something like that. A horse who significantly improved. And as long as, you know, you have to look at sires too. In other words, foals from the dam, look at their sires. Were they positive, negative, turf sires, neutral, whatever, and see, you know, maybe the dam was 2 for 5 with turf, but maybe the two that ran had reasonably proficient turf sires, and the other three had crappy ones. And today's horse has a decent turf sire. Things like that. I mean, everything's a little subjective, but I think you have to look at more than just the dams. And, you know, I mean, there is something to be said for looking at sires and dam sires as well. But I think there is something. You can uncover horses like the second place finisher who I didn't pick anywhere. I'm not looking to take credit for that horse. We just mentioned it a few times in the air, who had a right based on the pedigree to run a lot better on turf.
I'll give you one. And I got nothing out of him, but that Olympic Dreams in the Commentator.
Greg liked that horse. Yeah. Greg Wolf. Yeah. Greg would have hit the pick five if he had won. He hit it. But he would have also, if Olympic Dreams had won and the second finisher in the last race had won.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's why we made a mention of the show, how much he could have won. Yes, he could have won 40,000 or something, literally. I mean, it was 4,000 with the second horse, with the horse that won. So it had to be 30, 40, you know. It could have. I mean, I don't know if it was 5.5 times the price, but that horse, Olympic Dreams, could have been 10 times the price of Big Fives, especially with two blow-ups. And yesterday's pick five, which paid a respectable $600, given the prices of the horses, you know, is a good example of the fallacy of, you know, leaving out short-priced horses. Listen, I didn't like particularly Marvelous Maud, but, you know, if you used her protectively, kind of hard to miss that pick five, right?
Well, I managed to.
Well, but that's fine. But I'm saying if you had 4 or 5 and you left out Marvelous Maud, you didn't save the $24 or the $32. You cost yourself $600.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, if you talk to people who actually have studied payoffs and how they're the spread of payouts, short prices are your friends in pick fives. They're not your enemies. And this notion, which has unfortunately been distributed, that the opposite is true, is unfortunate. It's unfortunate because I think it leads people astray. Now, listen, there's always a million ways to skin a cat, right? And if somebody finds a way that works for them and they're successful with it, then they, far be it from me to tell them not to use it, but to dismiss the notion that using favorites defensively is wrong, it's a loser's mentality, whatever anybody wants to say. And, you know, you go back to a guy like the Doc, who clearly understands playing the paramutual game probably as well as any living person, he will tell you just that.
No, this is an elaborate discussion too, but there were.
No, but I think that yesterday's one is a good example.
It is a good example.
Parlay. It paid twice the parlay.
Yep. Well, and you, it,
I mean, that's, you know, I mean, and there wasn't a difficult horse in the sequence. I mean, arguably, you could say that Rudy's horse that won that paid 11 and change. And Bankhead, who paid $12, both were overlays.
Yeah. And even
Bankhead was the second choice in double. So, you know, so, I mean.
Yeah.
How they made Oster the favorite, who I picked, but I would never have picked him at 5-2.
Not 5-2.
Never.
No, I agree. I did the same thing. I Olympic Dreams was my.
He had to be third choice behind Bankhead and the one. And listen, I was wrong. I'm not, you know, wrong with the worst. And I was wrong about the price.
You know, the other payout, 204 on the cross country, which included Echo Zulu.
I didn't pay attention to the sequence. Didn't it involve a race at Monmouth too?
No, it was the eighth and the ninth, the last two at Churchill, and then the last three in New York. So it was City Man, Bankhead, Creesa, Echo Zulu, and I'm going to forget the maiden winner.
It was that Kenny McPhee horse.
Yes.
At like 3-1 or something.
Yes.
The parlay was $80, $90, And Kane's horse was around 3-1, I think. So it was probably close to 400 for $2. And what did it pay?
204 for 50 cents.
Right. So it paid twice the parlay once again.
Yep.
Without a difficult horse in the sequence.
Yep.
You know, but maybe you wanted to throw an Echo Zulu, to try to bolster your loss.
I'll talk about a loss. When Collaboration got taken down, that I wasn't thrilled with that. Although I don't,
Richie thought the horse had to come down, and I obviously respect Richie's opinion on these things as much as anyone's. I disagreed. I didn't think he had to come down.
I
disagree with Richie that the horse bumped the other horse. I do not disagree with that. If that's your sole reason, I don't know. I felt like it was one sort of not significant bump, and this was one where I don't like the whole was never going by, but really, I hate to say I've seen much worse day, like people say on Twitter. And, once again, it was yet another example of the worst disqualification ever. And people are leaving the game en masse because, once every 4 months, there's a disqualification like this. So, there's that, people throwing their hands up and saying idiotic stuff. But I wasn't involved at all. I didn't like the 11 stretching out, and I didn't really like Collaboration. Nick liked her a lot more than I did. But I was surprised the horse came down. And I will say that Dylan Davis has been subject to a number of disqualifications and fines for that I was surprised by. So I don't know, I don't know if, and I'm not putting a finger at Dylan, to be honest with you. But Dylan stepped his game up and started getting more aggressive, actually, the last few days, and it started paying dividends. And I gave him a little bit of a hard time because he's been underachieving with just the end of four wins in like 30 seconds and thirds, which is usually an indication of a rider that's not riding that well. And I think one of the reasons was he had gotten away from riding aggressively. And he started riding more aggressively and had some good results this weekend. I would not have, if I was a steward, I wouldn't have taken that horse down. But doesn't mean that this is what is not even close to one of these horrible calls. It's just not a call that I probably would have made. I talked to different people, and some, like Richie, thought it should have come down. I talked to plenty that thought he should have stayed up, or she should have. So, I just fell on the other side of it. But I didn't think this was a terrible call by the stewards. I just didn't really agree with it.
Yeah, I didn't think it had to. I mean, in fact, I'll tell you what happened. I turned away to look at either.
I assumed the horse wouldn't come down when I first watched.
Exactly.
And I had to go down and go on the air. So it took me a few minutes to get there. And I realized once the inquiry at that point was taking so long that it was probably coming down. But
well, I didn't realize it until I noticed that money wasn't added to my account. That's when I noticed then. I was like, what?
Did you notice first or did Tina?
No, she was out doing the yard work. Don't get me started on that.
You were inside betting and she was out doing the yard work. Well, there you have it.
And believe me, I heard about it.
You should have.
Thank you. You always take her side. You always take everybody's side.
Oh, I know. I take the right side in this case.
Oh!
Memorial Day. You're lucky Maury Sendak's dead.
What else? Who did you like?
No, Steve, it's your show.
I'm looking through the results. Who did you like in that Mike Lee, the 3-year-old race?
The winner.
You did, huh? All right. Mm-hmm. I was lukewarm on the way. I was trying to.
Okay.
It was all right.
Okay. Well, plenty of winners. I'm less than lukewarm on. So
well, you fine. love a turn back. You're a turn back.
That horse wasn't. Well, I do think that the Jeff Ruby is a much stronger race people give her credit for, synthetic or not. And I like that horse. I thought he ran very well, actually.
Yeah. Do we have a fig on that race?
I didn't look.
88.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't finish up a lot of the Saturday work last night, so I was finishing up this morning. Not finishing, I got to make the picks now.
Well, the whole weekend's, they drew all the weekend cards, right? Everything's done?
No, we drew through Saturday.
Oh, okay, not through Sunday? All right.
Draw Sunday and Thursday, Steve. The draw schedule is pretty easy, and the other thing about it is, I know you're kind of a neophyte, but you can go to the website and look at the horses page. and you can look at the condition book, and it tells you every day that we draw.
I understand that.
I'm not sure you do, so I'm trying to help.
Well, here's what I knew.
You know what? If you can't do it, get Tina to.
I only even was aware of Saturday because Joe Longo sent out already the Saturday cross country lineup.
Yeah, I'm trying really hard. I'm thinking of taking a salary cut to get off Joe's email list.
What's the matter? You didn't want to know about some county fair and their wagering menu?
Oh, we love those. Pat and I love those. Those are our favorites. You know, when the Grants Pass email comes out.
Well,
not to pick on Grants Pass.
No, don't pick on Grants Pass. But if you want to the Arapahoe County Fairgrounds.
Not to pick on them either. Because Arapahoe is by Denver, right?
Yes, actually, Arapahoe is actually a real racetrack. I don't know why that name. How about Cumberland up in Maine? Do they still race the wheelies at Cumberland? Oh, I've got an important question that came up with Rich, and I'm curious about you. And you know, having grown up in Saratoga, we somehow got on Storytown USA and. You know, summers up and going up to Lake George for family outings.
I think there were a lot of Sterling family outings in Lake George. You had to guess.
Our
cousins had a boat, and they used to invite us up. It was a sailboat. And I really hated going on it. I really liked my cousins, but I still like them. But I did not like going out in the sailboat. Those were our only trips to Lake George as a kid. I was never a big amusement park guy. My father took me and my brother to the Palisades amusement park.
Ooh, in Jersey.
In the 60s.
Wow.
That I remember. And that was fun. I remember the fun house with the mirrors. I loved that. But no, not a lot of Sterling outings, especially at places like Storytown, et cetera. I prefer a place like the First Story and Pastoralia, the George Saunders book. About, you know, in fact, it is the story that I'm almost sure inspired the Geico caveman. You know, the caveman. I think it's taken from that story. Pastoralia is a great book of short stories if nobody's ever read it, by George Saunders. And the first one is about people that live in like a caveman village or something, like a story town. It's very clever.
Oh, how fun. We may have
to. And I think if you look it up, the guy who came in comes from the idea that came from that story, I believe.
You're so chock full of that kind of
useless crap.
Of intellectual esoterica. It's perfect.
Oh, intellectual BS.
Well, having gone to Palisades Park, can you name the singer of the song Palisades Park? This is you're the Jeopardy guy.
Yeah, I can because my father told me. Is it an Irish name?
It's got a nickname in the name. It's a name and it's his nickname at the same time.
I don't know why I know it's not Gordon Lightfoot for some reason that in my brain. What is
Freddie Boom Boom Cannon?
No, you know what? I didn't know that.
Freddie
that
Boom Boom Cannon.
That's not what I'm going to say. Yes. No, I did not know that actually.
All right. Well.
Sorry.
That's I don't know why I necessarily.
I'm going to guess the Palisades Amusement Park is at this point is a mall. It's probably been a mall for 40 years.
I can remember going over the George Washington Bridge when it was there as a kid. And there was also, I'm going to give you another one like this. There was an amusement park at the end of the Throgs Neck Bridge. And there was a pool. There was a community, like a swim club. You know how on Long Island there's all the swim clubs, and on the Jersey Shore.
I've been to Atlantic Beach.
Those are great. I mean, those are it's straight. Well, like that's one of our favorites, right? The Flamingo Kid.
Flamingo Kid's a great movie.
One of our absolute favorites. She just died, Jessica Walter, right, as the mother.
And Janet Jones is married to Wayne Gretzky, correct?
Absolutely.
The woman.
Absolutely. And the late, was I think, late Richard Crenna, right?
I don't know. I asked Tony Randall.
Gin Phil.
Yep. Anyway.
So great. Now we're off the rails. You've done that. You've absolutely.
I didn't do anything here.
Well, usually it's you.
No, not me. It's you.
Exactly. was there anything?
Did you anything to set up for the show with me, or you just figured we'd talk about a lot of nonsense instead?
Well, I like talking nonsense, and it was, you know, it's a holiday weekend, so
well, it takes less preparation to talk nonsense. Of course you do.
We're motivating the listeners because.
When are you heading down to New York?
I'll be down on Saturday.
Because you've been home for way too long. I mean, this is the longest you've been home. I only ask you a serious question. Since the Preakness, is this the longest you've been home in, like, 2023?
Yes.
Pretty close, right?
Oh, not
you were gone almost the entire year.
Correct.
Seriously.
Correct. I was home. I started the year. I guess I was home the first 2 weeks of the year. And
I didn't agree much to have you there.
Well, then I was home for 4 days. In February and 6 days at the end of March, but otherwise I've been on the road. Yep,
you're a regular Jack Kerouac.
That's me, and I love it. I do love it. I mean, and we had such a fabulous Triple Crown season, and it's going to end strong. It looks like things shaping up nicely for next week.
Then I'm ready to head out to Ohio to Cleveland, the Ohio Derby.
You're going to go to Thistle now? Are you doing a remote?
I think it's the right race for the horse who ran the best race in the Derby to make his next start, the Ohio Derby. I think that's the move I would make. No, but I'd like to go.
I'm going to take the positive view, and they're looking at a three. They want to run the.
I understand they want to run the Hassel and the Travers.
Yes,
they'll be done.
Yeah,
obviously, I'm a fan.
I
have been for a while.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Well, I wonder if and when we'll see. Where's the one? The Rebel Confidence Game.
There is.
I guess it's a bigger if than a when.
Well, because they did. I've not seen an update since he went for some diagnostic. They wanted to.
Yeah. Means they're usually in the horsey Bermuda Triangle.
Well, there's
a lot of horses there. It's not just easy, believe me. Not pointing fingers at anybody. It's unfortunate. It's too bad because I thought he ran super in the Rebel, and I don't think he ran badly in the Derby. Frankly, I think he's a very talented horse, and it's a shame. I mean, it's got to be very frustrating for them. Because he's good. I mean, I think there's an argument he's one of the better 3-year-olds out there. But fortunately, like a lot of good horses, we might, you know, who knows when we'll see it. I hope we do.
Well, they're certainly, you know, we are certainly getting some nice replacement parts. I mean, and some horses that, you know, that keep kind of.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see as it goes on. I mean, there's a lot of room on the top in that division. There's no doubt about it. But there's some potential out there. You know, Greg made a funny point to me the other day, which is actually kind of an interesting one. He said to me, "Is there an argument that McLean's Music could have maybe been the greatest horse ever?" And you know, because he ran the 114 buyer in his debut, and you know, he was more impressed with his debut than Flightline was. Now, obviously, he never ran again. He's turned out to be a pretty good sire, by the way. Turning out to be. And it is a funny point because who knows what he could have done. As Greg said, I think a 114 buyer would have won a lot of the Breeders' Cup sprints. I said most of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is sort of interesting to think about. I never really thought about it that much, but can you imagine? So talking about horses that I'm sure it was frustrating, and Steve Asmussen trained him. He was a Stone Street horse, I think, from day one, right? I believe. Was because – they bought the dam. Yeah. Do you remember who the dam was? It's Forest Music.
Oh, that's
and Forest
right. Yep.
Music
yep.
was that
yep.
horse for Michael Hill that broke his maiden with Mark Schumann by like 18 lengths at Laurel, and then like 10 days later went the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. And actually was like six, I think it was the half bridle one. It was like 6-1 or something. Shockingly finished last. And Stone Street bought her, and her first race for them and for Steve was the Honorable Miss, which she won. I think she might only won one more race after that, though. But she was the dam. She was his dam.
Interesting.
Kind of an interesting story. You should ask Steve about her sometime.
I will.
You should ask him about McLean's music. I would admit nobody's ever really talked to him about McLean's music, particularly.
Well, we have because you know because he stands. Yeah, because he first of all, Shirzando's a McLean's music, and he stands at Hill and Dale, and so we've discussed it with not just Steve but with John Secura as well. And
I mean, but John didn't rate, but John didn't have him when he was racing.
No.
About what he was like for him as as a racehorse. You know, and that's what I'm leaning towards more, not about having him in stud as much as. I think he's a story that people don't know that well. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They sort of know of it a little bit, but I think, there's so much. When you think about it, would have been a good story, I think, after Flightline. You know, a story maybe of what could have been, but of all the horses of what could have been, imagine what he could have been, right?
Well, here's something funny because you and I have had these conversations when a horse like McLean's music goes to stud and, you see people scoff and say, oh, my God, who's going to breed to that horse? And then they go off and they have.
Well, there's a great deal of randomness in horses getting stallion deals. I mean, a lot of it is based on a race and a pedigree. But a horse getting a stallion deal because he won by a relatively short margin one or two big races. I'll give you a horse that's arguably the best New York bred sire out there right now is probably Central Banker.
Central Banker, sure.
Well, Central Banker wins the Malibu instead of losing by a neck to Shaking It Up. And as the sun is fights down, he almost certainly gets a stallion deal in Kentucky. He beat Shaking It Up in the Churchill Downs handicap, which is now a grade one, but then was a grade two. So he ended up being cleverly bought by Joe McMahon and standing in New York and becoming a very, very strong stallion.
Yep.
But he was a neck away from winning that Malibu, and he probably moved too soon that day. Not that I have any intimate knowledge of that race. And he ends up a stallion, I'm just using him as an example. There's quite a few out there, and I just think because of his pedigree, it might have been very different. What if he had started out standing in Kentucky? Not to say, he hasn't had a chance in New York. He's done very well with it, but, and I'm glad he did because it's good for the New York breds. But it's just, you look at the trajectory, and that's why, you see, apparently they're spending a lot of money for the Vino Rosso's, right? They like the new stallions.
Yeah.
And he had that nice New York bred. That won, that was heavy favorite, that Mike Baker trained, that won on Friday. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, Friday. Yeah, I was in. I don't know if that's one of his first runners or not. There's this first crop, right?
Yes, and well, there's a Omaha Beach had the first winner, and
Omaha Beach had Mike Tom Morley had that grass horse.
Right.
Very good running at 5 furlongs in Omaha Beach. That horse could be going to Ascot. Now, I have a question about Ascot.
Yes.
No, I wouldn't go, but I get it with the two-year-olds a little bit more. Now that the Queen has passed away, and I rue the loss, we rue the loss of all racing fans, is the appeal of Ascot going to be less? I don't think a lot of people are flying over there to meet King Charles the same way they flew over there to meet the Queen. What do you think?
I think that's a very fair point, and has not been brought up in proper context yet.
Well, it has now.
Well done.
I just occurred to me. I mean, wasn't one of the selling points of Ascot the Queen?
Yeah. Without a doubt. And I don't think anybody's going to be betting. They're not, certainly not going to be betting on what he's wearing to in the
oh, someone will be betting on it. I won't. Who's your next victim, by the way?
It's up in the air, actually. So, and you may have to
Lord
carry you.
List of lucky folks.
Unbelievable. I had somebody in mind, but it is not.
Nobody lined up to the end of the show, so you just assumed you'd just keep me on.
I figured you'd.
I have no life.
I guess I will bring this up because I'm not doing it this afternoon. I think tomorrow. I got the nicest. Well, I don't know if it's a surprise. Maybe it's a surprise, and I shouldn't say anything. All right, I'm gonna.
You're thinking you shouldn't say it, Steve. Don't.
All right, I'm gonna wait until I know that it's. I was asked to contribute to
Steve,
a show.
Steve.
Yeah.
Once again, if you think you shouldn't, don't.
All right, then I won't. Then I
Good.
Won't. All right, I. But boy, I'm tempted to because you.
No,
you,
I can't tell.
Well, you would have some perspective on it, actually, and so I'm going to do it off air.
You're going to ask me when we're off the show.
That's what I'll do. All right, remind me because I have to go to the doctor after as soon as the show's over.
I think a lot of people know that too.
That's not that kind of doctor. Do you want to take a minute though and look ahead for us a little bit? We do have
But you got some quarter off, and then I am going.
All right, that's fine. Perfect. So we got 7 minutes, seven more minutes of Andy, folks. This is like extra time in soccer matches.
People just turn their radio off on mass, whether they listen on the computer or whatever they listen on.
Pennine Ridge, the race that some people don't feel that this that he deserves to have a race, but
well, I like to think that Pennine Ridge does.
Yeah,
well, you know, not dissimilar to the Sea Hero statue in Saratoga, which I think in a lot of ways is up there in memory of
Mr. Mellon.
Paul Mellon.
Yeah,
are you aware of who owned Pennine Ridge?
That's a. I'm gonna. I think it's Peter Brandt.
Wrong.
Oof. All right. Firestone.
Steve, a simple no would have been fine.
No, let me keep guessing.
It was owned by Alan Dragone.
Oh.
He was chairman of the New York Racing Association.
Sure.
He was a really, really nice person.
Sure.
And I always felt that the Pennine Ridge was more named for Alan Dragone.
Well, that's nice.
Worse per se.
Yeah.
And Dave Don.
Yeah.
Who apparently you think trained horses for Peter Brandt.
Well, he might have. Why wouldn't Peter have given David a chance?
I didn't say a why. He's not a why. I don't ask why questions. He didn't train for him.
Let's take a look at the Pennine Ridge because...
Yes. I've actually looked at it for quite a bit of time,
well,
believe it or not.
There includes a first-time North America that...
Well, then why don't we talk about... the race, and why don't you let me talk about it because you haven't looked at it. So don't start perusing the form and starting your crap. Obviously, Silver Knot is the biggest story. The Godolphin horse coming in for Charlie Appleby somehow has only won one of four starts in this country this year. I mean, there's got to be something wrong. Who has a propensity to break badly, as he did in the Breeders' Cup where he got beat in the nose, and he did not run well in the rain in English Guineas at all. He was sort of eased the last probably eighth of a mile. And Far Bridge, the $2+ million purchase that ran very respectably, losing by a nose to Webslinger coming up the rail. It's funny that Far Bridge and Silver Knot are two horses that seem comfortable coming up the rail. And they're obviously the two biggest stories in there. I mean, Calic for Chad Brown ran pretty well, improving to win. An hours of one off the maiden win. That horse will probably be third choice over, I'm guessing, the other Chad Brown horse, Balloony, who won a sort of mediocre Woodhaven. But I think Silver Knot and Far Bridge, the two stories in there, and they are far and away the two likeliest winners. There's a trainer switch to Chad Brown and Congruent, but he'd really have to improve to be at all effective here.
That's a horse that's coming up from Florida, from Antonio Sano.
Correct.
And...
Correct. I tell you, one horse isn't bad. He's not good enough to win here off a layoff in all likelihood, but with Chase on the rail for Jorge Abreu. I don't, you know, I'm guessing it's probably, you know, it's an owner that likes to be aggressive as well. Sort of a tough spot. Probably would have been better off, and there's a one he could have run in this week. I'm glad he's running it. He would like that mistake. I think this horse is okay. I thought Pilgrim was very good. And I don't get too caught up in the figs that, you know, you see these 2-year-olds come along on the turf that run, you know, 60s and 70s, running mid-80s immediately as 3-year-olds. So I won't be surprised when he's okay.
Yes, mentioning Larry Goichman and Lachey's, this is a Goichman homebred. And yesterday, Runaway Rumor just nabbed.
Yeah, Carlos Mullen finds a way to win.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe she's picking things back up again after kind of a lost season last year.
Who?
Runaway.
Well, she was good at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, but second
half of the season was good, first half bad.
There you go. Yeah. Because she really gave signs, you know, as a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, that she was going to be special. It's interesting. I'm a fan of hers. That's all. Well, this is really a nice collection, and an interesting collection of eight for the Pennine Ridge, and the sequence, the whole card, actually, the pick five sequence looks attractive. You got a nice state bred allowance. You got a maiden going long on the grass. What's the race proceeding?
Yeah, the main race, the seventh, is tough. I agree. It's a couple of main players. The two main players, or two of the main players, Cumberland and Balthazar, both were rained off earlier in the meet. I think Orson there is not bad as Flyright. Flyright was a very solid 2-year-old and ran well in his debut behind Gentleman Jim on the turf. At the Labor Day weekend at Saratoga, so he can run well fresh. And I think that Flyright's horse to be a little under the radar. You've got a Kingman Euro for Chad Chemrans and Karovich, but it's not an easy race at all.
You also have a firster for John Gunther, the homebred.
Yeah, the dam side is very strong Euros, not very strong, decent Euros. And I love the Oscar performances. I mean, he's been really, really interesting sire. The eighth is... Well, the eight, no, they'll bet Shadow Dragon, I guess, could win. Ormstown, but Ormstown can have trouble making the lead by a long shot in this race. It's a lot of speed. Saffler's Commission seems sort of logical in there. The tenth is a mess. I've done all the work on it. Started making picks or put the races together. I'm going to work on that as soon as 11:45 comes, which really is just around the corner.
Literally.
Much like freedom.
Just
it's not Dylan's song, Joker Man. Freedom, just around the corner for you. Yeah, I can relate.
Andy Serling at 11:45 here in the Northeast.
Why don't you, you know, all right. We good?
I think so. You've been spectacular. This is
yeah. So your level for spectacular is a lot lower than some others. I'll see you later,
Andy Serling. Everybody, I was hoping that we were going to get Andy all the way to the wire because I was ready to play Palisades Park as the closing. It's really an annoying song. For those of you that are too young to remember Palisades Park, it's got it's got people screaming in the background, screaming on a roller coaster. You know, it's got like a. What do you think, Case? now I think I've got. Do I have people curious about this? This is all right. You, and since I do have a couple of minutes, why have I done this? I can't help myself sometimes, right? The minute he said Palisades Park, I the first thing I thought of actually was Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, right? Who didn't? Who wouldn't have? Certainly of a certain age. That, and I'm curious, and actually my friend Steve Carlin says Palisades Park closed in 1971. Wow, that actually surprises me, because I can distinctly remember rides over the George Washington Bridge and seeing, and I never got to go to Palisades Park as a kid. We had, other, including in Douglaston, Kitty City, which Steve prompted me to remember. And those of you that grew up, there on the western end of Long Island, anywhere in proximity to Great Neck and Douglaston Golf, I think the golf is the driving range still there, Douglaston Golf. But next to it was a really cute little amusement park. This is back when we were kids. I was telling Tina this the other day. We were driving back from Rochester, and we went to the Brewster Inn for brunch, which is right on Cazenovia Lake. And Tina has to hear. I mean, she calls me Grandpa even before we had the three grandchildren. She was calling me Grandpa because I repeat the same stories over and over again, which is a sign, I guess, of of dotage. But I can't remember which stories I've told her. So there are going to be occasions where she's going to hear the same story again. But we were driving. We went to stop at a Wegmans, actually, in Liverpool. And then we were driving through Syracuse to angle toward Cazenovia. And I have another question about Cazenovia, which is troubling. The little town of Manlius, which is right sort of between, right, you know, just outside of Syracuse and on your way to Cazenovia, there was, when I went to Colgate, there was the remnants, even then it was the remnants of an amusement park right across from the remnants of a boys, I think, military academy, Manlius Academy. And I've mentioned this before. For those of you that are on, Instagram and anything where photography is big, and video, I happen to love the Urbex abandoned genre. You know, the pictures of abandoned buildings and abandoned whatevers. I've always been, part of it's because my dad was was an engineer and in construction and did a lot of redevelopment and refashioning, repurposing of, mills and into apartments and things like this. I've always enjoyed that. So this goes all the way back to when I was at Colgate, and there was this Manlius Academy, and you could drive up into, through the campus, the small, it wasn't big, it was a smallish campus, but across the street was also the remnants of an amusement park. And so I told Tina that story, and I think that was actually new to her, those stories. But remember, I mean, when we were growing up, I'm 63, there were a lot more of those little, like sort of pint-sized amusement parks. They, not like a big, not like something, like Six Flags-esque. Even Storytown was fairly big. But I mean like the little, like sort of like almost not neighborhood amusement parks, but like these, there'd be like a handful of rides and a few, and maybe a midway. There was one, Savin Rock, for those of you that know about Savin Rock, West Haven, Connecticut. That was a big amusement. There was a bunch of those. There were amusement. You'd go to Jimmy's for hot dog. Jimmy's, and I can remember going to the original Jimmy's in Savin Rock. My dad built in Savin Rock, and there was an amusement park, little tiny amusement. We don't really have those anymore. In Albany, there was one, and now it's been moved to that. I didn't know about it actually until word came that it was closing, but it was one of those, and all the equipment was bought up by Huck Finn's, the furniture store. Anyway, I am curious if anybody has a tweet to me, if you would, or send me an email about a neighborhood. I'm curious if you had like a neighborhood amusement park that you could go to when you were a kid, something that nobody's really, you have to be from a certain community to remember. this, you never know. I never know when the show starts. I sometimes I have no idea, but here you go. Freddie Boom Boom Cannon with Palisades Park. I guess the today's theme was goofy, goofy amusement park subplot. I've got 3 minutes to kill. I'll give you another one that is still around and is as charming. I don't think it's what it used to be. And if you're not from New York, you won't necessarily know it. But if you've seen the movie Big, you've seen Playland Rye and the Dragon Coaster, which I think is the oldest wooden coaster in the country, maybe, if I'm not mistaken. Playland Rye is like literally, it's like time stopped. So charming. And the scenes you see in Big, that, you know, when Tom Hanks goes to, you know, go find Zoltar, the Zoltar machine, that's Playland Rye. And obviously it was filmed after the season ended. But I used to cajole, when I was a kid, I used to cajole my father, because my grandmother lived in Larchmont, you know, which is a couple of towns over from Playland and from Rye. And then I didn't go for years and years. But I had a girlfriend from Tarrytown, Karen Papp. And we would go all the time. If we did something for dinner in White Plains, it's when I worked for Dan and Yogurt. We worked on Westchester Avenue. It was the headquarters. And we might go for dinner in White Plains somewhere, and then, you know, we didn't want to go to a movie. Let's go to Rye. Let's go to Playland. And so we'd go to Playland and you know, ride the Dragon Coaster and play a game, or, you know, just it. You just, even if you just walked around, it's such a throwback. And there was the dance, you know, there's the where Tom Hanks and who's that, Elizabeth Shue, where they dance. That's a ballroom that's sort of separate from that's where, like, the adults, they dump the kids and the adults would go to the dance hall, to the ballroom. It's a sweet place. And I've tried to convince Dina to stop, and she I haven't been able to convince her. So maybe, you know what, maybe we always do something fun the day after Belmont on the Sunday. We've gone to Yankee games, we've gone to the Botanical Garden, Brooklyn Botanical Garden, we've gone to Bronx Zoo. Actually, this year, we're going to a show. We're going to be going to a Broadway, Prima Facie, which my brother is the press agent, and it's going to be a big deal. Jodie Comer, it's supposed to be just an incredible tour de force by Jodie Comer. So looking forward to that the day after. So anyway, we brought you to the end of another 3-hour odyssey that included a few different exit ramps. Thanks to Andy and to Mig, Christophe Clement and Peter Ertin. Good luck if you're playing today. There's some options today if you want to play. Give you a quick glance ahead. You got Indy and Presque, of course. Assiniboia later. Fairmont, Finger Lakes, Fort Erie, Louisiana Downs, Mountaineer, and Parks, and Thistle. speaking of Cleveland and the Ohio Derby. Ohio Derby's $500,000. It's a fine target for people. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9. If you missed anything, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at PennVet.